Hello, I'm Christine, a volunteer reader on the Black Country Talking News. This week's edition is for Wednesday, the 29th of July, 2020.
Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightless Charity, Beacon Centre. I'm Simon. We are pleased to inform you that our Talking News service is now once again available in CD format. And to those who have received their CD in the post, you'll notice they're in paper envelopes, not the usual plastic wallets, so there's no need to send anything back. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Online by visiting Beacon's website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/on-air/podcasts. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts, simply search Beacon Black Country Talking News and hit the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have Christine, Mina, Ian, Helen, Talking Book Steve, Flashback Roger, Angela, and me, Pete. And this week, we have a roundup of local news. We have our weekly quiz, our Talking Book review, our flashback section, where we look at this week in history. And in sight loss news this week, we look at the eye condition diabetic retinopathy. We have reports on Wolves and the promoted West Bromwich Albion, the weather for the weekend and next week. We've got some environmental and sustainability ideas with Kez, an update from Beacon, plus we'll have our new, well, it's not so much new now, but you know what it is, the music quiz at the end. Now, the music quiz from last week we set you. So it was trying to find the missing word in the song title. And the songs were sent in by Andy Colston. So as always, thank you, Andy, for sending them in. And how did he get on? Let's have a look. So the first one was from 1962. It was Cliff Richard and the Shadows and the Young Ones. That's the word we were looking for. From 1963, the Beatles, From Me to You. From 1964, Cilla Black, Anyone Who Had a Heart. From 1965, I think this is the one that might have flummoxed you all, Horst Jankowski and A Walk in the Black Forest. And from 1966, it was The Supremes and You Can't Hurry Love. Well, you knew that one, didn't you? Okay, we've got another music quiz coming up at the end. Let's start off with some local news now with Ian and Angela. But first, it's Christine.
A piece of artwork depicting Black Country football legend Duncan Edwards has helped raise £600 for the NHS. The Duncan Edwards Foundation wanted to raise funds for the ward treating Steve Donoghue, who set up Manchester United group the Stretford Enders after he caught coronavirus earlier this year. Rose Cook Monk, who set up the foundation based in Dudley, came up with the idea of creating artwork of Duncan Edwards using words associated with him, as well as asking supporters to donate £5 to have their name included in the finished piece, which is made up from all the names and words. Rose added, "Thankfully, Steve has gotten much better. He was really quite poorly and his chances of living were slim. Thankfully, he's been doing much better. The original artwork will be donated to Steve. We have a canvas print version in the new Duncan Edwards Museum and we will be selling print versions of it." The Duncan Edwards Museum, also founded by Rose Cook Monk, who runs the Duncan Edwards Foundation, will open to the public on August 14th.
Coronavirus could lead to the West Midlands Combined Authority facing a financial black hole of more than £11 million, a report has said. Figures from the authority, chaired by Mayor Andy Street, and made up of councils across the region show finances have taken a blow, primarily due to transport income falling as a result of the COVID-19 restrictions. Transport is one of the key functions of the devolved authority, with its Transport for West Midlands arm overseeing the region's transport infrastructure. It owns and operates the West Midlands Metro, co-manages local railway services alongside the West Midlands Railway franchise, and works closely with bus operators to improve bus services in the region. Chiefs have said the financial black hole in the 2020-2021 budget was not unexpected, and stressed the government had provided some funding to offset the losses. But the report warned the funding gap could potentially rise to £31.4 million over the next 6 years, with cabinet ministers set to be lobbied for further funding.
Tributes have been paid to Windruff campaigner Paulette Wilson from Wolverhampton, who has died at the age of 64. Miss Wilson was one of thousands of people affected by the Windrush scandal after she was nearly deported despite having lived in the UK for almost 50 years. She made her home in Heathtown, Wolverhampton, having arrived in Telford from Jamaica as a 10-year-old in 1968. Last month, she joined other Windrush victims to deliver a petition to Downing Street, signed by more than 130,000 people, calling for action to address the failings which led to the scandal. It had been hoped she could have received a compensation of up to 100,000.
Dudley councillors have agreed to award the freedom of the borough to people who have been on the front line in the fight against the coronavirus. The request, submitted by Labour councillor Kieran Casey, was formally approved at an extraordinary meeting of Dudley Council. The motion that has been agreed says the council should confer the freedom of the borough on the NHS, public health, adult social care, children's services, bereavement services and voluntary sector workers serving the people of the borough. It came as plans for a permanent monument outside Russell's Hall Hospital to commemorate people's efforts to fight the virus gathered pace, with more than £12,000 raised of the £30,000 target. Designs for the monument have been produced by local artist Steve Field.
West Bromwich Albion's promotion into the Premier League will be a huge boost for the Black Country, giving the region's economy a much-needed lift during the pandemic. Local leaders have congratulated the team and their fans on returning to the top tier in UK football after sitting in the top two of the Championship for nearly the entire season. The last few games were nail-biters for the Baggies fans, with promotion almost looking like it was out of their hands in the crucial last moments. But a 2-2 draw against QPR on Wednesday night, coupled with the fact that promotion rivals Brentford lost 2-1 to Barnsley, saw the Albion victorious in the end. Andy Street, the Mayor of the West Midlands, said the promotion would see a huge financial boost to the local economy during a challenging time.
More local news to follow. An update from Beacon now, with Helen.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre here. Well, another week has passed and we hope that all our listeners are keeping well. As you know, here at the Beacon Centre we've got an amazing team of volunteers. We're always on the lookout for other people to join them though. Whether it's an hour or 3 days a week you have spare, it really will make such a difference and we'd love for you to join us. You can find out more about the volunteer roles we've got available at the moment by contacting Becky Green, either on the phone by calling 01902 880 111, or you can email her at bgreen@beaconvision.org. That's bgreen@beaconvision.org. Now, do you love a good book? Whether it's audio or large print, there are many ways to ensure you can continue to enjoy a good story if you're living with sight loss. Many of our local libraries are beginning to open again. In Dudley, from July the 27th, you'll be able to browse and select stock and use the library computers. And in Staffordshire, there are a range of services available, including ebooks and their Reading Friends service via the phone. In Wolverhampton, Central Library will reopen to customers on August the 3rd for click and collect only. Customers will be able to pre-order books and other items online or over the phone and then go in to collect them. The click and collect services will then be rolled out to Wednesfield, Warstones and Bilston Libraries from Monday, August 17th. Plans for the further expansion of the service will be announced in due course. Meanwhile, the home library service for vulnerable housebound residents will be in operation from August 3rd. Just search for your local library service on Facebook, e.g. Dudley Libraries, to find out what's available near you. In other news, over the last few weeks, we've been telling you all about our summer raffle, which has gone digital this year. We'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who's snapped up a ticket so far. It will help make a difference to those we support. And if you haven't, then what are you waiting for? There's only a few days left until we draw the winning ticket on August 3rd. If you want your name to be in the hat, then log on to www.justgiving.com/fundraising/beaconsummerraffle. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/beaconsummerraffle. It's just £2 a number and it could win you one of three great prizes. You've probably heard in the news that face coverings are now required in shops. And so if you're thinking of popping into one of Beacon shops in the next few weeks, don't forget to bring one with you. There are some exceptions, including for children under the age of 11, or if you have a disability that would stop you from wearing one. Hopefully, we'll see you in one of our shops soon. That's it for this week, so thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
All of Beacon's contact details will be coming up at the end of this week's edition. But now let's return to local news with Angela.
More than 200,000 worth of debts, including unpaid council tax or overpaid housing benefits to Wolverhampton residents, are set to be written off. Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet will meet on Wednesday, July 29th, where it will receive its first financial report of the year, looking into the health of its budget for 2020-21 so far. And as part of that, authority bosses will be asked to agree to write off thousands of pounds owed to the council by its residents and businesses in the area. The report to Cabinet said debts are only written off as a last resort, and they can be pursued again in future if circumstances of people involved change.
8 play areas have reopened at Dudley Parks, ready for the summer holidays. The playgrounds are Mary Stevens, Priory, Wordsley, Stevens, Lissells and Hunting Tree, Silver Jubilee and Netherton Parks. Signs will be installed at the sites, advising parents of precautions to take to ensure safety while children are using the equipment. The outdoor gyms, which are at 8 of the parks, will also reopen. Dudley Council bosses are hoping to open an additional 10 play areas from August the 1st. They include Cot Lane, Abbey Street, Buffery, Grange, Woolerscott, Sedgley Hall Farm, Hurst Green, Homer Hill, Clayton and School Drive Parks. Play areas and outdoor gyms have been closed since March due to the coronavirus pandemic.
Play areas and other outdoor gym equipment in Wolverhampton Parks will reopen during the summer holidays, council bosses have confirmed. Wolverhampton Council is reviewing information and guidance and chiefs hope to reopen the facilities sooner rather than later. No official date has been given for the reopening of play areas and outdoor equipment. Equipment will be inspected and maintained regularly. New safety rules will also be in operation, including using hand sanitizer before, during and after, and sticking to social distancing guidelines.
City of Wolverhampton Council has bid for nearly £4 million in funding to protect the environment for future generations. Wolverhampton Council has applied for funding from the European Regional Development Fund for 3 projects, which will encourage the uptake of low-emission vehicles, improve green spaces, and improve the heating efficiency of council buildings. If successful, the bids will see the council receive up to £3.9 million of funding to help support its climate change commitment.
The Mayor of Dudley, Councillor David Stanley, is leading a campaign for covert CCTV to be installed to catch out fly tippers. Cotwell End Road, part of the Cotwell End Nature Reserve in Lower Gornal, has become a popular target for fly tippers during lockdown. Recently, a council team collected 120 tyres in one trip that had been dumped along the route, which is popular with walkers. Councillor Stanley said, "Cotwell End Nature Reserve is right on my doorstep and I regularly enjoy a walk around it. We are very lucky to have it, and it has been very disheartening in recent months to see the amount of rubbish that has been dumped by people with no regard to others along Cotwell End Road. It costs the council thousands and thousands of pounds to clear up. I have asked officers to consider installing covert CCTV cameras around the hotspot areas. It would act as a deterrent and catch those who insist on continuing to flout the law."
More local news to follow, but it's that time of the week again. Now, what time is that? Well, here's Mina.
It's quiz time again. Yes, and we're here again to test you on events that happened on this week in history. Now, as always, you'll find the answers in our flashback section with Roger coming up later in this week's Black Country Talking News. Are you ready? Here we go. Question one. What was George Burns' catchphrase that he said on closing each of his shows? Question two. In what year were the first artifacts from RMS Titanic brought to the surface? Question three. How did Vincent van Gogh try to kill himself? Question four. In what year was the first official quarantine law passed? Question five. In 1945, a United States Air Force bomber crashed into which famous building in America? And finally, question six. What was the name of the person assassinated in July 1914 that started World War I? Keep listening for the answers with Roger. If you missed them, we'll let you know all the answers at the end of this week's edition. Good luck.
Thank you, Mina. Now, as you know, we go through all the answers in our flashback section, which is coming up shortly, and we run through all the answers again right at the end, and Mina will be back to give the answers at the end of this week's edition. But now, let's carry on with some local news with Ian.
A new crossing for pedestrians and cyclists will be created across Wolverhampton's Ring Road to link the city centre with Molyneux Stadium and the University. City of Wolverhampton Council has successfully bid for £110,000 of funding to create the Toucan crossing over Ring Road St Peter's. It will provide an additional option to the Molyneux subway, which is currently the most direct route for people wanting to get from the city centre to the football stadium or the neighbouring university buildings. The new crossing will run from where Paternoster Row meets the Ring Road, across the Central Reservation and over to the Molyneux Hotel City Archives building. Funding for the project has come from the government's Emergency Active Travel Fund, and a condition of the grant is that the works are completed quickly. Construction is due to start next month and will be completed by September. The council will also be putting forward bids for future funding to create a cycleway which would run through the Ring Road Central Reservation between Stafford Street and Chapel Ash to create a safe route for cyclists.
Around £8.5 million has been set aside to improve the conditions of roads in the Dudley Borough this year, council bosses have revealed. The cash is nearly double what Dudley Council spent last year, where £4.3 million was spent on repairing roads, pavements and potholes. Council chiefs have vowed it will now full steam ahead with works that were delayed due to the coronavirus lockdown. This year's budget has been increased to £4.7 million and it will be supplemented by a further £3.8 million in government funding. It followed a successful bid by the West Midlands Combined Authority to the Challenge Fund, with the cash available to improve roads with particular focus on bus route networks.
City of Wolverhampton Council is progressing its transformation plans for a new look city centre to ensure works can start as soon as government funding is secured. Detailed design is complete and early contractor engagement has been carried out on Phase 1 of the public realm proposals on Victoria Street. Phase 3 on North Street and adjoining streets around the civic halls is being brought forward. Detailed design on the public realm outside the venue is expected to be completed by November. It is all part of plans for the project formerly known as West Side Link, that will see the creation of a high-quality city centre pedestrian environment, improved pedestrian and cycling connectivity, and creation of new public spaces capable of hosting large-scale events and activities. The aim is to reinvigorate and drive economic investment into the city core by increasing footfall and visitor spend. The scheme forms part of a final bid for funding made to the government's Future High Street Fund, with Phase 1 expected to cost £11.6 million and Phase 3 £4.2 million. The outcome of the bid is expected around September 2020.
Health officials are to roll out more coronavirus testing across Wolverhampton in a bid to prevent local outbreaks. The City's Council has announced it will expand its testing capacity and carry out more swab tests. Two testing sites are currently in operation in Wolverhampton at Showell Road in Bushbury and Aldersley Leisure Village in Claregate. However, the Council did not specify if any new sites would be set up.
A proposal for a second phase of new council houses to be built as part of a multi-million regeneration of a rundown Wolverhampton estate has been put forward. More than 50 new homes will be built across four different sites in Heathtown, if the planning application submitted to Wolverhampton Council is approved. It forms part of the overall £120 million transformation of the area, which will see more than 300 homes built over the next few years to go alongside other improvements that had taken place. Other work that has been completed as part of the transformation scheme includes the extensive demolition of empty buildings, while Wolverhampton Homes has carried out improvements to existing residential blocks. There have also been the creation of three new play areas and a football pitch, while thermodemolition work to remove garages and walkways in Hobgate Road has also been carried out.
Our final news roundup coming up shortly, but now, sight loss news. One of the more common eye conditions is diabetic retinopathy, which is a complication of diabetes, which is caused by high blood sugar levels damaging the retina at the back of the eye. The retina needs a constant supply of blood received through a network of tiny blood vessels, and over time, a persistently high blood sugar level can damage these blood vessels in three main stages. The first is called background retinopathy, where tiny bulges develop in the blood vessels, which may bleed slightly but don't usually affect vision. Stage 2 is pre-proliferative retinopathy, where more severe and widespread changes affect blood vessels, including more significant bleeding into the eye. And then there's stage 3, which is proliferative retinopathy, where scar tissue and new, weaker blood vessels develop on the retina, and they can bleed easily and can result in some loss of vision. If someone has symptoms such as gradually worsening vision, sudden vision loss, shapes floating in their field of vision, sometimes known as floaters, blurred or patchy vision, or eye pain or redness, it doesn't necessarily mean they have diabetic retinopathy, but it is important to get them checked out early and not wait until their next screening appointment. Annual diabetic eye screening is offered to all people with diabetes aged 12 and over, as anyone with type 1 or type 2 diabetes is potentially at risk of developing diabetic retinopathy. It doesn't tend to cause any symptoms in the early stages. However, the condition can cause permanent blindness if not diagnosed and treated promptly. And screening can detect eye problems before they start to affect vision. If problems are caught early, treatment can help prevent or reduce vision loss, and it's only necessary if screening detects significant problems that mean vision is at risk. To minimise the risk of diabetic retinopathy, people with diabetes should look to make healthy lifestyle choices, ensure they control their blood sugar levels, blood pressure, and cholesterol. and attend diabetic eye screening appointments. The main treatments for more advanced diabetic retinopathy are laser treatment, eye injections, or an operation to remove blood or scar tissue from the eyes. The most important part of treatment is to keep diabetes under control. In the early stages of diabetic retinopathy, controlling diabetes can help prevent vision problems developing. In the more advanced stages, when vision is affected or at risk, keeping diabetes under control can help stop the condition getting worse. Some suggest this condition is one of the leading causes of blindness in 20 to 65-year-olds. Other studies suggest 1 million people living with type 2 diabetes have not been diagnosed, and that an estimated 4.6 million people are living with the disease. Those that don't know they have the condition are at higher risk of developing other eye conditions, such as glaucoma or cataracts. And as with all eye conditions, early intervention, getting it checked out early, is very important. Let's move on now. More local news, our final local news bulletin, with Christine.
MP Stuart Anderson has welcomed a decision to close Wolverhampton's Tettenhall Pool for the rest of the year amid fears of crowds gathering. Mr Anderson said he backed the plans to ensure people were safe amid fears over crowds gathering and ignoring the rules. The Wolverhampton South West MP said the surrounding areas are starting to have spikes in cases and Wolverhampton is in the green area in the minute. We've all been doing an excellent job of keeping the cases down. Tettenhall Pool is loved by everyone. I love taking my family there, but I had a major concern over maintaining social distancing and preventing the spread of the virus. For those reasons, I agree with the council's decision. It's an iconic pool and you might see 1,000 people there on a hot day, and I don't think we can ensure that it will be safe. As much as I would like to take the kids, we're still only just coming out of lockdown and need to ensure that we're all safe. It comes after the pool, situated in the heart of Tettenhall's Upper Green, was closed last year for repair works after a consultation on whether it should become an outdoor gym. More than 95% of the 3,796 responses to the public consultation rejected plans for the gym and decided to save Tettenhall Pool, which reopened on August 1st last year.
Visiting times for the maternity unit at Russell's Hall Hospital are set to change as lockdown restrictions ease. People will be able to visit their partners in postnatal bays and those who are receiving transitional care at the hospital. Visits will be carried out to those on beds A and D from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Other visits to beds B and C will be carried out from 12 to 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., the new rules say. A spokesman said, "We know what an important time this is for families and appreciate your understanding as we keep you safe." Visiting times in individual rooms or if you stay on delivery suite following birth will be 10 a.m. to 12 noon and 2 to 4 p.m. During labour, one birth partner will be allowed, with only birth partners allowed to visit the unit at the hospital. No changes have been made to the antenatal clinics or scans as health chiefs await further government guidance.
Wolverhampton Central Library will reopen next month for the first time since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. From Monday, August the 3rd, it will initially offer a We Select You Collect service, through which customers can pre-order books and other items online and pick them up at agreed time. Members will be able to request specific titles via the online library catalogue from Monday. Requests for specific genres can be made from Wednesday by emailing libraries@wolverhampton.gov.uk or calling 01902 552 025. The Click and Collect service will then be rolled out at Wensfield, Warstones and Bilston Libraries from Monday, August the 17th.
An historical century-old organ at a Black Country church, which needed a £200,000 repair job, was instead fixed with double-sided tape, WD-40 and just £45 spent. the grand organ, which has been at St John's Church in Dudley for more than 150 years, has been in need of urgent repair for decades. But after church leaders were quoted £200,000 for the major task, they almost lost hope it would ever be fixed again. That was until organist Tim Lees, who grew up in Dudley, decided to take on the mammoth project himself. The 76-year-old first became hooked on playing the organ when he was just a boy, after his mother sent him and his brothers to St John's Church to keep them out of trouble on a Sunday. He has since played for dozens of notable figures, including the Queen, Prince Philip, Prince Charles, Nelson Mandela, and former President Jimmy Carter. He was also the personal organist to the Sultan of Oman for 10 years. Tim, who now lives in Leicester, said, "We thought we haven't got the money, so what's the best way? Well, we'll do it ourselves." A friend of mine is an organ builder, so I asked him for lots of advice, and I had someone come to help too, and we thought we'd look at what we could do ourselves. We needed a lot of WD-40, drawing pins, double-sided tape, and then bingo, the whole thing was up and running for £45. Tim came to Dudley once or twice a week to carry out the repair, which overall took 10 weeks to complete. He now says it just needs tuning, which a professional must do, but won't be a large expense. The musician played the organ for the first time in years at a special church service on Saturday, celebrating both 180 years since the church was built and the first official service since lockdown began. He added, "It was historic. We had a problem in the rehearsal, but the man helping me went in to fix it and the actual service went perfectly. No one wanted to leave at the end and asked me to play more. I really did put it through its paces and it kept my fingers crossed, but it went without a hitch." Tim, who also taught music at Wensbury Boys High School and was director of music at Dudley Boys Grammar School, said without St John's Church, he doesn't believe he would have led the life that he did. "I owe a great debt of gratitude to that church," he said. "I would ask anyone who's interested to visit St John's. They're trying to turn it into almost a local museum, and there is a vast churchyard with so many famous local people in there. Without that church, I don't think I would do what I do now."
Family and friends gathered for a special 100th birthday party post-lockdown. Kathleen Mary Colborne, formerly Kathleen Bowen, was born on the 25th of July 1920 and lived in what was then known as St Luke's Place in Bilston. She still lives in Bilston today. Her family and friends gathered on Saturday for an outdoor party. Now coronavirus restrictions have eased, to celebrate the milestone event. Her son, John Colborne, said it was a lovely day for everyone. He said, "My mother has had a good life being part of a loving family, and in later years she liked nothing better than she and her husband Sam going out at the weekends and on holiday with her daughter-in-law's parents, with whom she became best friends. When she was young, her family lived in St Luke's Place, which is now the South West Academy, and the Burke Williams Centre, until 1929, before moving to her current home where she has been for 90 years. She met Samuel Colborne during the war years when they worked together at Nickling Limited. She worked as a milling machine operator and he was a welder, both of them working to make bomb casings. They were married in Holy Trinity Church in 1942 and had a son, John, at the end of 1944. During the late 1940s, Mrs. Colborne was asked to deputise for a dinner lady at Holy Trinity School in Bilston for 2 weeks. But that 2 weeks turned into 30 years, and she served at both the infant school in Oxford Street and the junior and senior school in Queen Street. For many years, she was also secretary of the Mothers Guild at the Holy Trinity Church and helped organise functions and other events to raise money for the church. Her friends and family gathered in Bilston with cake, food and gifts on Saturday to celebrate with her.
Our sports bulletin coming up with news from our local football clubs. But I know what you're thinking. When are we going to get the answers to the quiz? Well, here's Flashback Roger.
This is our flashback section, where we look at events that happened this week in history and where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On July the 26th, 1895, Gracie Allen was born. this American comedian and wife and partner of George Burns, whose catchphrase at the end of his show was, "Good night, say goodnight, Gracie." Their career spanned vaudeville, radio, movies and television. Gracie actually had one green eye and one blue eye. And that's called heterochromia. Their TV show, The George Burns and Gracie Allen Show, ran from 1950 to 1958. On July the 27th, 1987, the first artifacts from the unsinkable RMS Titanic were recovered by French explorers. The Titanic sank in 1912 after striking an iceberg in the North Atlantic during her maiden voyage. Actually, I was going to watch that film, but that spoilt the end for me now. Oh well. Also on July the 27th in 1890, Vincent van Gogh, after years of mental illness and poverty, shot himself in the chest in a suicide attempt. The bullet was deflected by a rib and passed through his chest, but did little damage to his internal organs. He was able to walk back home, where he was attended by two doctors. However, the wound became infected, and he died on the morning of the 29th. The story that he cut off his own ear is exaggerated, because it was actually just his earlobe he cut off. I thought that was a bit drastic to my way of thinking, if he didn't like his earring. Anyway, Van Gogh created over 900 paintings, which now sell for millions, but he only sold one during his lifetime. July the 27th again, but in 1377, the first ever quarantine legislation was created. The Adriatic port of Ragusa, now Dubrovnik, passed the first legislation requiring the mandatory quarantine of all incoming ships and caravans. It required all that came from plague-infested countries to spend 30 days in isolation on the islet of Mukan, or in the town of Kavtat. This was for the purpose of disinfection. This, of course, was during the time of the bubonic plague or Black Death, which devastated Europe and Asia in the mid-1300s. And the Black Death was the most fatal pandemic recorded in human history, resulting in the deaths of 75 to 200 million people. July the 28th, 1945, a US B-25 bomber crashed into the 79th floor of the Empire State Building. 14 people were killed, including the pilot and his two crew members. A female elevator operator survived a 75-story elevator plunge, which still stands as the Guinness Book of Records for the longest survived elevator fall. Lieutenant Colonel William F. Smith, Jr., was piloting the B-25 Mitchell bomber on a routine personnel transport mission when he asked for clearance to land, but he was advised of zero visibility. Proceeding anyway, he became disoriented by the fog and turned right instead of left after passing the Chrysler Building. On July the 28th, 1914, the Great War started, later known as World War I. It began when Austria declared war on Serbia in retaliation for the assassination of Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife by Serbian nationalist Gavrilo Princip a month earlier. Soon after that, other countries joined the conflict and the Great War was on. More than 16 million people would die as a result of the war. July actually was a great month for space photography. On the 31st of July 1964, we saw the first photos of the moon's surface by US spacecraft Ranger 7. It sent back a series of pictures of the moon's surface. It would transmit over 4,300 photographs during its final 17 minutes of flight before it was deliberately crashed onto the lunar surface. But on the 31st of July 1971, the first moon drive was taken by American astronauts Jim Irwin and Dave Scott, who took their lunar rover for a spin on the moon's surface. And on July the 31st in 1976, NASA released the famous Viking 1 photograph of face on Mars, a photograph that was also known as the Happy Face Crater. The photograph has caused lots of theories about life on Mars, and the photograph could be interpreted as a non-natural shape. That was quite an interesting one this week. Hope you do well with the quiz questions later on. But bye for now. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Roger. And we'll go through those quiz answers a little later with Mina. But now, with news from our football clubs, here's Ian.
Nuno Espirito Santo has praised Wolves for their big achievement in sealing back-to-back top seven finishes, but still wants improvement as they await their European fate. Wolves ended the top flight season with a 2-0 defeat to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, Mason Mount and Olivier Giroud with the goals. And although they have finished with 59 points, the most they have managed during the Premier League era, they need the Blues to beat Arsenal in the FA Cup final to clinch another campaign of Europa League football. It is the first time Wolves have finished in the top seven in successive seasons since 1961, and Nuno said it is a big achievement for the boys. To be able to achieve more points, it's a big sign of improvement. But we have to keep on going. We want to be better. This season has ups and downs, but in the end the boys have worked really hard. That is credit to them, and this is how we want to continue. Our belief and our commitment is our foundation, so we cannot go away from that ever. Wolves still have this season's Europa League to think about and could even grab a Champions League berth through winning that. For now though, they just have to wait. After Tottenham's 1-1 draw at Crystal Palace was enough for them to finish sixth. The season continues at Molineux on Thursday the 6th of August with the second leg of the Europa League tie against Greek side Olympiakos with an 8 p.m. kickoff. Poised at 1-1 from the first leg on March the 12th, with the winners playing Roma or Sevilla in quarterfinals. Congratulations to West Bromwich Albion, who returned to the Premier League after a nervy 2-2 draw at the Hawthorns against Queen's Park Rangers. Fan favourite Chris Brunt believes Albion can take inspiration from Sheffield United as they prepare to return to the Premier League. But the departing club captain has warned the Baggies will have to get their recruitment right if they are to become an established top-flight side. Brunt waved goodbye to the Hawthorns on Wednesday after 13 hugely successful years with the club. The modern-day legend will now support the Baggies from afar while he continues his playing career elsewhere. I think becoming an established Premier League side has to be the aim for this club, Brunt said. We recruited well this season for this league. We got some good young players in who want to play in the Premier League. It's important the football club does that now to take the next step. I think the hard work starts now for the football club if they want to be a Premier League for many years to come like we did before. It doesn't happen overnight. It's difficult and recruitment is going to be a big part of it. I'm sure they have been busy working behind the scenes, but obviously not knowing what division you are going to be in until the last day doesn't help either. If you look at the teams who went up last year, Norwich have come back down, Villa have struggled. But I think Sheffield United are the ones that have done really well. Teams that get promoted can take inspiration from them. Albion joined Wolves and Aston Villa in the Premier League with a season starting on September the 12th.
And the last time Wolves, West Bromwich Albion and Aston Villa were in the Premier League was in the season 2011 to 2012. So that was a few years ago, wasn't it? Talking Books now is Talking Books Steve.
Welcome to the Talking Books section of this week's Talking Newspaper. I'm going to give you a summary and a brief overview of one of my favourite Talking Books. In fact, it's from a series of books which I love and have enjoyed over and over again since the day the first book arrived. And we're talking about the Harry Potter series. And this week I'm going to talk about, in particular, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. It's book one of J.K. Rowling's now infamous series of books about young Harry Potter, the wizard. And this particular talking book also happens to be narrated by the wonderful Stephen Fry. Now, if you haven't ever heard a talking book narrated by Stephen Fry, his voice is quite simply a match made in heaven for talking books. And again, this is a, the Stephen Fry narration of Harry Potter is again an absolute match made in heaven too. So, for those of you wondering, what is Harry Potter, the Philosopher's Stone, all about? Well, Harry Potter has never even heard of Hogwarts School when the letters start dropping on the doormat at number 4 Privet Drive. Addressed in green ink on yellowish parchment with a purple seal, they're swiftly confiscated by his grisly aunt and uncle. Then, on Harry's 11th birthday, a great beetle-eyed giant of a man called Rubus Hagrid bursts in with some astonishing news. Harry Potter is a wizard. And has a place at the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. An incredible adventure is about to begin. And for those of you who have not had the privilege of the Harry Potter world yet, it is indeed an incredible adventure. J.K. Rowling's writing is fantastic and renowned now as, you know, it's been loved by all from children through to adults. And as I mentioned earlier, Stephen Fry is, you know, the voice of all voices when it comes to talking books. For anyone interested in leaping into the world of wizardry and witchcraft, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone talking book lasts around 9.5 hours and can be sourced from a range of talking book libraries. If you would like some support and some help accessing talking books or Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or just want to know a little bit more about how to go about downloading content or receiving talking books through the post, get in touch with the team here at Beacon and we'll be happy to help.
And Beacon's contact numbers will be coming up again at the end of this week's edition. Now, where were we? Oh, the quiz. Yeah, the quiz. Time for the answers now with Mina.
As always, our questions are about events that happened on this week in history. So, how did you get on? Let's go through the answers. What was George Burns' catchphrase that he said on closing each of his shows? He used to say, "Good night, Gracie." Question 2. In what year was the first artifacts from RMS Titanic brought to the surface? The answer is 1987 by French explorers. Question 3. How did Vincent van Gogh try to kill himself? He shot himself in the chest. Question 4. In what year was the first official quarantine law passed? The answer is, it was 1377 to try to control the spread of bubonic plague. Question 5. In 1945, a United States Air Force bomb crashed into which famous building in America? The answer here is the Empire State Building in New York. And finally, question 6. What was the name of the person assassinated in July 1914 that started World War I? The answer here is Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria.
And Mina will be back with the weather shortly. But now, environmental and sustainability ideas with Kez.
Today, I'm going to talk to you about food and the way that the food we buy and consume can actually have an impact on our environmental footprint. So the first thing to think about is the type of food that we're buying. So this could be things like reducing the amount of meat that we buy and consume, maybe so that we cut out a couple of portions of meat a week, because more vegetable-based diet actually drastically reduces your carbon footprint. But also, it's about thinking about where that food is coming from. So, for example, if you buy more locally produced food that is seasonal for where you're living, then actually you're reducing the food miles of the produce on your plate, and that has a massive impact on your carbon footprint and is therefore much better for the environment. If you are buying food, it's also important to look at the packaging that it's coming in, so trying to reduce the maybe single-use packaging, looking for alternatives. So obviously one of the big things now is that you can get a lot of reusable bags for putting your loose produce in, A lot of supermarkets will now let you take a reusable container to put your meat or fish in. So it's thinking about doing things like that. But it can also mean sort of shopping differently. And I know this can be a challenging thing to think about at the moment, but maybe actually looking for other places to do your shopping. So looking at, for example, zero waste shops, where the packaging tends to be a lot more environmentally friendly, and the produce maybe has a slightly more ethical element to it in terms of the way it's actually been made. We can also then think about what's actually happening with our food. So as a nation, we waste a huge amount of food each year, and, you know, we just chuck it in the bin, and depending on where you live, it either goes to landfill or an incinerator. So with that, we can think about things like composting, like I've mentioned previously, but we can also think about, before food gets to that point, is there something we can do to prolong its life? So can it be frozen? Can we make it into jams, pickles, preserves, that kind of thing? Or put it on a food sharing app where people can see what produce you have left over and actually come and collect it from you for free, or also donating it to food banks. So this is just a few of the ways that you can actually think about what you're eating and where your food is coming from to actually have an impact on reducing your carbon footprint and having a better environmental lifestyle.
Thanks, Kez. Now, if you have your own environmental and sustainability or recycling ideas, please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Now, what does the weather have in store for next week? For the final time for this week, it's over to you, Mina.
It looks like a dry weekend with some rain next week as we move into August with temperatures between 13 and 28 degrees, so quite a difference there. The sunrise and sunset times for next week are: sunrise will be at 5:29 a.m. and sunset at 21 p.m. On Friday 31st of July, we're looking at sunny and moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of a whopping 28 degrees. So it's going to be hot. It's time to get those shorts out the wardrobe if they haven't been out yet. We have a medium UV and pollen levels. As we move into August, Saturday 1st of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees with medium UV levels. On Sunday 2nd of August, we have a light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees with medium UV levels again. Moving on to Monday 3rd of August, we have light rain, showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. UV levels again at medium. Tuesday 4th of August, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees, UV levels at medium. On Wednesday 5th of August, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees, UV levels again at medium. And finally, Thursday 6th of August, a drier day with sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees, with medium UV levels. Enjoy the weather.
I will, and thank you, Mina. And to finish this week, it's our little quiz, our little music quiz, where we ask you to guess the song title. We'll miss a word out and see if you know what the missing word is. As always, thank you to Andy Colston for sending them in. And let's go to 1967. And the first title, or the first track, Excerpt from a Teenage What, by Keith West. I'm going to put the word what in, by the way, when we miss the word out. So, Excerpt from a Teenage What, Keith West. Now, I know what you're thinking. I've never heard of that. Well, neither have I. From 1968, I Close My Eyes and Count to What? Dusty Springfield, from 1969, My Sentimental What? Herman Hermits. From 1970, It's All in the What? The Four Tops. And finally, from 1971, I Did What I Did For What? Tony Christie. I thought they were a bit tougher this week. Well, we'll give you the answers next. Over to you, Simon.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sightless tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!